We're going to adjust the schedule a little bit. We're going to have an episode this week, a newsletter next week, an episode the next week, and a newsletter the next week, and go on from there. These adjustments are to accommodate some out-of-town traveling I'm going to be doing over the next month. So for the meantime, enjoy an episode a week early. What's up, Shitpost listeners? This is your host, Jared Holt, back with you for another episode. This one is about the ways that conservative media just try to keep audiences outraged. Day in and day out, there is always something it seems to get furious about in conservative media. Outrage content is a bipartisan thing online. As much as the right likes to whip their audience into a frenzy, as do hyperpartisan left-wing media creators and outlets. The difference is the level of buy-in. Additionally, there's also some very stark contrasts in funding and levels of sophistication. Right-wing outrage culture online has completely dominated the GOP. I wrote about this recently in a newsletter a couple weeks ago. Things like cancel culture, potato head toys, Dr. Seuss books have become a calling card for the GOP. Its most vocal and visible politicians spend their time going on news networks railing about these issues rather than proposing policies to make this country better. That amount of institutional buy-in has given this kind of content more power in our modern media environment, political environment, and social environments than it has had before. And with Trump out of office, this seems to be the game plan. This is what GOP opposition looks like when it meets their media and it meets their grandstanding politicians. That other difference between left-wing outrage media and right-wing outrage media has a lot to do with funding, too. The outlets, the hyperpartisan sites that are producing this content, whether it be a Lil Nas X video to get mad at, or, you know, the removal of a Native American woman from the Land O'Lakes butter logo. The sites pushing these most aggressively are bankrolled by right-wing money superpowers, getting grants from things like the Koch Foundation and Donors Trust. The amount of money supporting this kind of media infrastructure, which is just pushing outrage and fury and whipping their audiences into a frenzy every single day, is very well funded. People who start fresh out of college can get their hook in a DC media-esque environment and only fail upwards, it seems. And the whole political movement seems vested on ensuring the success of these media endeavors. On this episode, I'm going to speak to Parker Molloy about the whole ordeal and how exhausting and tiring it is and how shallow and vapid it often proves itself to be. I'm not going to waste any more of my own breath. Let's just get straight into this interview I had with Parker Molloy. Joining me now is Parker Molloy, editor-at-large at Media Matters for America. Parker, how's it going?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. Playing a lot of video games. Got my vaccine, you know.
As good as you can be right now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know.
Well, I wanted to talk to you because you've written a lot about the topic of this episode, which is kind of something I've found myself thinking and almost obsessing about lately, which is this kind of hyper-partisan media, and in particular right-wing media, that is just hell-bent on keeping audiences as angry as possible all the time. And with Trump out of the White House, losing access to, you know, high-level government and stuff, really just scraping the bottom of the barrel. You wrote something today about Lil Nas X and a sneaker that he put out, and kind of, you know, how the outrage around this tennis shoe kind of played into Lil Nas X's whole scheme. He's a master marketer and, you know, kind of exposed how hollow the whole thing is. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So just so basically what happened was Lil Nas X released a music video late last week that is for his latest single. And it basically, in the end, it features him giving Satan a lap dance. And naturally, conservatives were pretty upset about that. And but, you know, he also kills Satan at the end of it. He gives him a lap dance, then he kills him and then becomes Satan. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. If this was a different person, this would be a biblical lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, but so anyway, so he's got that video that came out. And then he teamed up with this streetwear brand called Mischief, which is MSCHF, is because vowels are out, I guess.
Yeah, you can't have vowels and be street.
No vowels. But yeah, so he teamed up with them, and what they do is they take shoes and they modify them and then they sell them for more money. And a couple years ago, they made a shoe that was a pair of Nike Air Max 97s in white, and in the soles of the shoes, they put holy water in there.
Oh, that was them.
Yeah. So they did this, and it has like, they did that. It had like a crucifix on the top, and the whole thing was supposed to be like a joke about like collaboration culture going, you know, like going to the extreme and collaborating with, what would a shoe that was like a collaboration with Jesus be, basically. And it's funny, you know, and they sold these shoes for like $3,000 each. It was a, you know, and they sold out almost instantly. And so what happened this week was that same brand did the opposite. They bought a bunch of Air Max 97s in black, and then they modified them to be Satan shoes. They made 666 copies of them, and they're all individually numbered. And in the sole, there is like red ink, but also, supposedly, it's not like anyone's going to check, one drop of human blood.
That reminds me of when Kiss made a comic book back in the day. They did the same thing where they put some of their blood into the red ink for this comic book.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's no way anyone can test this. You know, you kind of have to just trust them at their word, but okay. And so he has those shoes, and Fox News starts kind of freaking out about it. And at first it was just like, the singer's selling Satan shoes because he worships the devil, basically. And they had the story wrong. They were like, oh, Nike will put these out, but Nike won't put out the Betsy Ross flag shoes. Which,
oh, God.
It took me a second to remember what on earth they were talking about, but it was that pair of shoes that was supposed to come out around the 4th of July a couple years back that Colin Kaepernick, I guess, said he wasn't like a fan of because the Betsy Ross flag had been kind of appropriated by some like, you know, like white supremacist groups for their own sort of logo. And so Nike pulled them. And so they were upset about this. And the funny thing was, the first time that this happened, the weatherman on Fox News had to be like, actually, these aren't made by Nike. These are just, they bought these shoes from Nike, but then they modified them. Nike has nothing to do with this. And you would think that that would have cleared things up, but apparently not.
Yeah, that weatherman was like showing his power level of streetwear.
Yeah. he's like, I actually have this one covered, while everyone else was like, no, I think I have the whole story here.
As he irons out his Supreme tie.
You know? Yeah. But of course you had like Gateway Pundit and like Breitbart and Daily Caller and Daily Wire and, you know, all those right wing websites that were just running these stories that was like, how dare he and how dare Nike put this out? Maybe we should all boycott Nike. And it was this whole sort of ordeal, which was extremely predictable. I mean, if there's one thing that, you know, right-wing media loves to jump on. It's, you know, stories about people embracing Satan, I guess. And so they did that, and it was kind of predictable, and there was outrage, and they covered it. And the whole time, Lil Nas X is on, like, Twitter, just, like, loving this, quote tweeting people who were trying to, like, say, how dare you? And he's like, you know, he's like, hey, I'm just trying to do my thing, you know? Like, you're talking about shoes while all this other shit's going on in the world.
Yeah, my favorite response that I saw of his was, there was some guy trying to be like, Lil Nas X, the guy who made the song Old Town Road, beloved by all our children, is taking this disgusting route. And he replied something to the effect of like, Old Town Road talks about adultery and drinking lean. Like, it's your fault that you put that in front of your kids. Like, I'm just doing me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then there was another one that was like, you'll have to answer to God for this. And then he posted something that was like a text message. It was like a screenshot of a text message that like came from, you know, it said like God in the send section, said like, we're all good, you know, like, which was just great. He was just trolling them. He put out like a YouTube video of him pretending to cry and to be like, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to. And then he just starts like laughing. And he played them, and it's perfect. I mean, the reason that Old Town Road was such a huge hit, in part, I mean, it's very catchy, obviously, but it was because like he was churning out all of these memes around it, really trying to just sort of turn it into a whole thing. And it took off on TikTok. And so thanks to TikTok, that song kind of went to the top of the charts, and then it was everywhere. So, you know, this is kind of similar in that it's a very unorthodox way of getting your stuff out there. I mean, he did for his last single, he had a music video that he promoted with a 30-second ad that ran during an NFL game where he rides into town on a horse. And he like, and Santa is in that town for some reason, falls off the horse, dies. And thanks to the laws of the Santa Claus movie, he becomes Santa. And then it turns out that the town that he was in is the old West town from Back to the Future Part 3. And he gets on his horse and it like gets up in the air and flies away basically. And like, disappears. And then it cuts to Michael J. Fox at the end, says, Nas, whatever you do, don't go to 2020. And it was just this whole like, it's just totally bonkers. And I loved it because it makes no sense.
It makes just no all over sense. It's just this like,
yeah,
giant like coleslaw of touching different nostalgia points. Like, it's very well thought out. I mean, the guy is, as you noted in your piece, a brilliant marketer. But right. I want to zoom out a little bit and just kind of look a little bit more about how Lil Nas X was really playing this right-wing outrage culture, as you said, like a fiddle. And, you know, I think it kind of exposes, you know, I wrote something for my newsletter a week or two ago about the whole Potato Head saga. And I feel like recently it's becoming more and more apparent that this outrage conservative media cycle is just like entirely disingenuous, entirely just desperate and reaching for the new thing to do that day. And it's getting to the point where you're starting to see even some like libertarian commentators, people at publications like Reason, you know, kind of trying to caution people about this whole cancel culture, mob, outrage culture thing. And I can only assume that's because they see it as a long-term liability.
Yeah. I mean, with this, you know, when, cause I've written just, you know, like just looking at my, cause every once in a while, something will like take off in conservative media and I end up writing about it for like a month or two straight. And it was like back in January, I wrote about Josh Hawley being all upset about cancel culture, supposedly because his book got delayed and all of that stuff, and then it got picked up by a different publisher.
Yeah, yeah. His book gets canceled for his role in stoking lies that inspired an inspiration. That could have been any of your children. Any of your sons could have... That could happen to them.
You know? And then, you know, of course, the whole thing is like... And then with CPAC that came up in February, they were like... Oh, well, I think it's wrong to say that Trump shouldn't speak at CPAC. Isn't that cancel culture? It's like, come on. You know, it's gotten to the point, it's gotten ridiculous at this point. And so I've been really interested in this because it's just a story that just keeps going on the right. I mean, at the end of February, they were talking about Dr. Seuss, which was not a thing that anyone was you know, which is not a thing that anyone was really clamoring for. The Dr. Seuss Enterprises decided to stop publishing 6 books that had, you know, racist stereotypes in them. And I don't think it was something where there were people like pushing them to do it. I think that they were just sort of like, hey, maybe this isn't in our long-term interest to keep publishing these 6 books because they're not the books that, you know, it's not Cat in a Hat and Green Eggs and Ham. It's books that I can't, you know, If I Ran the Zoo, which, you know, it shows like people who are supposed to be Asian in cages. And it was a whole, it's pretty bad. I mean, so obviously they would rather people remember him for his good work, which is kind of the whole point of Dr. Seuss Enterprises, is to preserve his legacy so they can make as much money off of it as possible. But yeah, they entered the 5th week now of talking about Dr. Seuss, which has just been so ridiculous to me. And that's why when they got so upset about Lil Nas X, I thought that was perfect. It you know, it exposed the hypocrisy of all of this, of their big cancel culture is bad. You know, you have to learn to deal with opinions that differ from your own. It's that same speech over and over and over. But then as soon as someone makes a music video they don't like, or, you know, a shoe company releases shoes they don't like, they are saying, well, Nike should sue this, you know, this streetwear company because it's a bad look for them and it's trademark infringement and all of this. And then Nike did it. They go to Nike into suing this company, even though in the past, Fox News, when they covered the Jesus shoes, they were like, here's an interesting, funny little thing about that, and did like a quick little write-up that was about how funny that was, basically, not like, this is wrong and bad. So it's very clear they're very, very specific about what they're going to be mad about and what they're going to say shouldn't exist. And it really lays bare the whole basic idea of what their fight against cancel culture is, and it's just them wanting to control pop culture, to control what happens in the world. I mean, now if a brand decides to change their name or change their logo, because these things happen all the time. I mean, the brand Aunt Jemima decided to change the logo and no longer be like a woman for a bottle. And people on the right freaked out. The Land O'Lakes butter company put out a new logo that didn't have the Native American, you know, motif there. And people on the right freaked out. And so now it's gotten to the point where there's just no way to do anything. I mean, they got upset about, you know, Mr. Potato Head, and that was based on a misreading of Hasbro's like press release, just being like, hey, we're selling Mr. Potato Head, Mrs. Potato Head, and then also like other Potato Head things, you know, like they were trying to expand their brand so that they could make more money.
Right. It's just a cynical marketing decision.
Yeah, exactly.
It's streamlined.
But people freaked out and they were like, you know, no, nice job walking that back when after Hasbro like had to clarify, being like, no, Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head are not going anywhere. This is just, you know, in addition to that, that it's going to fall under the Potato Head brand, basically. And it just the whole thing is maddening because none of it is news. It's just an angry tantrum that goes on all day, every day. They find something new to be upset about. And it's honestly like they're just like playing Mad Libs with, you know, random things like find a noun, find something to be upset about today. And, you know, I mean,
it's just a lot, right? This is something that like really popularized on YouTube and social media because like the incentive there is to get clicks, right? Mm-hmm. You've got people like Tim Pool being like, listen, I'm a liberal, but the left is out of control canceling Mr. Potato. And it's like that used to just be kind of like for cranks on the internet, but now it's consuming not just like right-wing media on a large scale at huge places like the Daily Wire and Fox News, but also like it's infested a lot of GOP congressional members' brains. You know, Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, LOL, given current context, but you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, of course. Like it's all this culture war stuff, and mm-hmm. you know, there's the obvious incentive, which is that this stuff, you know, manipulates people's emotions, gets them angry. When you're angry, you're more likely to put your butt down in the seat and watch, or click something, or you know, engage with it. But I'm curious if you have any thoughts on like alternative incentives for doing this. Like you wrote something in a piece I remember a while back on this topic about how, you know, this is kind of, you know, something that right-wing media can do in light of the fact that they don't have access to power and also their ideas just aren't popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of their whole thing. I mean, if you look at how various policies poll, things that the right tend to push tend not to be popular, but things that the left push, those tend to be popular. So how do you accomplish your political goals when you're not running on popular ideas? Well, for one, you can kind of try to rig the map in your favor, which is happening, you know, at the state level. But also, I mean, you can find a different subject. You can fight a war that no one else is fighting. You know, they make it seem if you only got your news from Fox, you would be under the impression that college students were demanding that, you know, schools install a cry closet. Which, do you remember that from a few years back? Which, the thing about that story was the cry closet, it was an art installation. It was an art installation at one school that someone on, you know, right-wing media saw and kind of like flipped out about and was like, oh, the fragile kids need cry closets. And they just ran with it. And it accomplished the goal. It got people thinking, well, we can't trust the left with our cherished institutions and our, you know, our cultural beliefs, because this week it's something I disagree with, but next week it could be my favorite TV show, or it could be me. They could be telling me that I am, you know, sexist for whatever, you know, like all of these sort of things. So it keeps them angry, and it's especially effective, I think, right now, where if you look at the news that was, you know, up until they really latched onto this, the border, you know, the border crisis that they're kind of perpetually, you know, poking at this idea. Up until that, for the few weeks before that, they were really just kind of stuck. There was nothing really that they could do. Biden got his, you know, his recovery plan through Congress, and it turned out to be very popular with people across the political spectrum, which I feel like you know, Fox News and Republicans in Congress probably misread, you know, how that would go over with people. So they just kind of tried to sidestep it. And when you have the vaccines going up and you have the case numbers going down for COVID, it's generally speaking, decent news, you know, news that most people could kind of go, yeah, well, that's good. We're heading in the right direction with this, which isn't to say that that's, you know, isn't to say that it's Democrats or that it's Joe Biden or, you know, anything like that doing it, but they like a disaster and there wasn't one to pick from. So they have to, you know, take their viewers and show them a shiny object to look at over there. And sometimes that's Mr. Potato Head or it's the Muppets, which they were mad about there being a short little like disclaimer at the beginning of a few of their episodes when it went on streaming, or Dr. Seuss. You know, it's always something that really is just totally pointless. There's no, you know, what exactly do they want? I don't know.
Yeah, like the disclaimer is going to get pulled off the Muppets and then they're going to be like, we did it, folks. We saved the day. And it's just that, like, that I feel like this meme is just funny because I've seen it so many times where it's like the one character on one panel saying something, the other person being like, healthcare, please. But it's like, it's like vaccines, please, or it's, you know, stimulus dollars, please. It's like totally a substitute for any sort of like vision of governance. And I almost struggle to think about like who in like the conservative zeitgeist is still trying to fight for any like coherent vision of government. And because it seems like this culture war stuff, you know, it was already doing that in sort of the latter Obama years, but especially during the Trump years, just really kind of ate up the whole, you know, plate. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if one thing that I noticed during the, during the campaign last year was that if you went to Donald Trump's website, there was not an issues page. There was just like on DonaldJTrump.com, there was not a page that said like issues. If elected to a second term, I will do X.
That reminds me of the RNC instead of voting on a platform. They were just like, whatever this guy says.
Yeah, exactly. They were just like, just, you know, we'll just take the 2016 platform and like roll it over into 2020. And like the 2016 platform had things like, you know, like calling out, like saying like the president is bad, basically, you know. And it's like, well, that's weird when it's your own party now, but whatever floats your boat in the boat parades, I guess.
We love our voters.
Had Trump still been in office, he could have sent his boaters to get that boat out of the Suez Canal.
Yeah. We should know, you know, I don't want to be mistaken that this show is just like Biden apologia or anything. I want to make an editorial note here that there has not been news reporting of a single Biden boat parade since Biden was inaugurated. So with that,
shame.
So, as we're kind of rolling up towards the end of our time here, I'm curious what you think about the future. Are you seeing, you know, I mentioned earlier, I've started to see some conservative voices raise some issue about this. It mostly seems to be like libertarians at this point, and I have some feelings about libertarians that I'll keep to myself here, but there seems to be at least a tiny sliver of self-awareness that has emerged out there recently. But, you know, I'm curious what you think. Are you hopeful at all that there will be some self-reflection, or is this just kind of what it looks like it might be for the future?
I mean, honestly, when it comes to, you know, the media aspect of it, at least, I feel like this is kind of where they're at. This is where they're at, where they're going to be for the next, throughout the Biden administration, at least. You know, I think that is going to kind of be their go-to. They're going to run on culture war issues. They're going to keep talking about the threat posed by trans kids in sports, and you know, like all of these things that aren't actual problems anywhere in the world. And they're going to keep playing those up. Like those are the instances where they can pretend that it's a policy thing, where they can say this governor needs to sign this bill that will do whatever to advance our culture war thing. But I honestly, I can't imagine them pulling too far back from it, because I don't think that there's like a coherent vision on the right. And it's why, you know, someone like Tucker Carlson is so successful, is he goes on air every night. He knows what buttons to push, you know, to get his audience really angry, but he'll make the arguments. And this is another thing I wrote about like a year and a half ago, I think, which is that Tucker Carlson will tell you the problems. He will give you an accurate accounting of what a problem is, but then he'll give you something that's totally unrelated as the solution. He'll be like, the tax code's too complicated and it favors the wealthy and blah, 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 blah.
And then the open mouth, like leftist YouTubers yeah. are just like, this is somebody we should ally with and yeah. appear on his yeah. show.
Outflanking him to the left, you know, like, but then he'll come around like at the end of the thing that he's just been talking about, he talks himself in a circle and comes back to basically being like, and that's why the issue is that companies care about their trans employees, or, you know, that's why it's a shame that more women are in the workplace instead of taking care of kids at home. You know, like all of these things that are super regressive stances that don't actually have anything to do with the problem he laid out, but it gives him that sort of like credibility to make it seem like he's an issues oriented conservative. And I think that is what we'll probably see more of, which is this, you know, yes, talk about something that's a problem and then talk about something that is unrelated or definitely not a real solution, you know?
Yeah, it's just like a misnomer.
Yeah.
I think I'm using that word correctly.
I don't know. I think I called it in the article I wrote, I called it a rhetorical sleight of hand. Basically, you know, he gets you looking one way and then he does something, you know, something else, and you don't remember how you got from point A to point B, basically, which, you know, that's why he kind of just scares me generally, because, yeah. you know, he's smart. He knows what he's doing, you know, unlike, I don't know, like Sean Hannity, for instance. He just sort of, he's Sean Hannity. He's bumbling. He's, you know,
he drinks light beer with ice, I think is all we have to say.
You know, it's like, I think I refer to him as like Fox News is like the lumbering id of Fox News, you know? And it's like, you've got that, but then you've got Tucker Carlson, who is just this guy who's too smart for his own good and will use that in the most evil way possible if given the chance, you know? So I think that's kind of, that's kind of where things are headed. But yeah, they're going to be mad about, you know, every time anyone on the left even complains about something, because that's what cancel culture has become to them, is just anyone saying, hey, I didn't like that movie, or hey, I thought this comment from someone was kind of crappy. You know, like you'll then have them saying, oh, this is cancel culture. See, they're trying to silence this person, or, you know, they're trying to silence this movie, when really it's the right who are the ones who are pulling, you know, they got that movie from a couple years back, from like a year or two back, The Hunt, which was like an updated version of Most Dangerous Game. They actually got that movie pulled from the like release schedule because they were under the impression that it was glorifying murdering Trump supporters, which obviously was not.
Right. Right. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I guess the last question I have for you on this is, for somebody who is not caught up in this, you know, the people who gobble up this content all day long are, you know, just going to reject anything mm-hmm. that someone like you or I would say. Of course, they're trained not to. But I'm curious if you have any thoughts on like to quote unquote normal people. Like, how much attention should we be paying this. Obviously, this is reaching millions of people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in terms of priorities or triage of how we think about our politics or our culture, where does this rank?
Yeah, I think in a sense, it's important to remember that it's not the most important thing in the world. But I also think that, yes, there's damage that can be done if you just ignore it and let it kind of fester. Because what happens is on the right, they will do these sort of they will start all these little culture war kind of fights, and then the companies of that they're going up against, you know, whether it's Dr. Seuss or Mr. Potato Head or whatever, they'll start to get afraid of blowback from the right. So they'll start kind of just catering more to the right when it comes to, how they do business. And I think that that's something that you saw in 2016 with Facebook. And that kind of was a big deal. I mean, that Facebook catered to the right after there was a Gizmodo article about how, you know, Facebook was supposedly discriminating against conservatives. And they were just afraid of the blowback, so they sort of kind of were like, okay, we'll work some of your ideas in there. We'll change the way that our trending algorithm works. And so I think it's important to note, to just be able to see these stories and go, that's not what that says. You know, that's not what Hasbro said when it put out the Mr. Potato Head release. And I think the only thing you can do is, if someone's not going to read Media Matters, for instance, you know, if they're going to go, oh, Media Matters, that's, you know, biased or whatever they want to say, then, you know, I think the best thing you can kind of point them to is like the source material, you know, point them to the press release from Hasbro, point them to the statement from Dr. Seuss, and then just kind of let it go at that point, you know, acknowledge and then let it go. It's sort of, you know, if you're meditating, that sort of idea of like, you know, an idea comes by, you note it, and it just goes past you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of the best way to sort of stay sane when it comes to, you know, culture war stuff on the right.
Well, I've been talking to Parker Malloy, editor at large for Media Matters for America. Parker, I've really enjoyed this conversation, but because it's shitpost, I have one more question for you. What is your favorite thing on the internet right now?
Right now on the internet, my favorite thing is the and maybe this just speaks to how broken my brain is the Twitter account DistortBot.
I'm not familiar. And, what's that?
Yeah, so DistortBot, it's at DistortBot on Twitter, and if there's a photo in a tweet, and you reply to that tweet and just tag in DistortBot, it will do some weird ass distortions to the photo and then reply with that, which is really funny to do when it's like, you know, do that to like Tom Fitton or like someone who posts ridiculous selfies, you know, and it's so dumb, but it makes me happy. So I highly recommend that. Check out DistortBot.
All right, Parker, where can people keep up with you and your writing and all the stuff you're up to?
Yeah, you can. People can follow me on Twitter at Parker Malloy, or they can check out MediaMatters.org. That's where I do a lot of my writing, all of my writing, I guess.
All right, well, Parker, thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, thanks.
If you really like the show, please subscribe and consider giving us a positive rating on the podcast platform of your choice. It helps us reach new audiences in ways that are hard to translate, but it's something algorithm-y. If you really like the show, you can go to Substack, shtpost.substack.com. There, supporters if you give, I think I have it set to $4 or $5 a month, you get access to a newsletter in between episodes. That money helps us keep the show going, and it helps me keep the puppy fed. And that's going to do it for us this episode. This has been Jared Holt. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.